Simon of Cyrene was just an innocent bystander on the day of Jesus' crucifixion. Jesus had already stood trial before Pilate. The decision to crucify had already been made. He had already been flogged and spat upon, his head pierced with a reed of thorns. On his way to be crucified, according to John's gospel, Jesus carried the cross himself, as all condemned prisoners were expected to do under Roman rule, the cross on which they would be crucified. Carrying only the crossbar, mind you, the vertical stake having already been set in place. But the crossbar alone was heavy enough. According to John's gospel, Jesus carried his own cross. Not so in the other three gospels. And so we note, as we have time and time and time again, that John is an entirely different animal, which is why scholars find little evidence of the historical Jesus in John. In Matthew, Mark, and Luke, the so-called synoptic gospels, because they're very similar to each other, a stranger, a passerby, as Mark's account describes him, is compelled to carry Jesus's cross for him. Simon of Cyrene, referenced only this one time in the biblical record, referenced in a single verse in each of these gospel accounts, is simply going about his routine on his way to Jerusalem from the country when he is suddenly forced by Roman soldiers to carry Jesus's cross. We can only assume because Jesus at that point was not strong enough to carry it himself. Simon did not choose to carry the cross. He did not make a conscious decision. These gospels make that very clear. And yet all three pay tribute to the act itself by recording his name. Say his name. Simon of Cyrene, the man who is only but will be forever known as the guy who carried Jesus's cross, the guy who literally followed Jesus to the site of his crucifixion. Simon of Cyrene. It's useful, I think, to keep Simon in mind as we come to this morning's gospel text. This quintessential Christian text is from Mark, the earliest of the four gospels included in the biblical canon. But we could just as easily have read from, you guessed it, Matthew or Luke. Addressing both the crowd and his disciples, Jesus lays it out as he so often did, provocatively and paradoxically, forcing them and us to really think about it, to try to wrap their minds and their hearts and eventually, ultimately, their lives around its truth. If any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For those who want to save their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake and for the sake of the gospel will save it. For what will it profit them to gain the whole world and forfeit their life? This is the cost of discipleship in a nutshell. And discipleship, following Jesus, requires us to choose. We are not compelled like Simon of Cyrene. Again and again and again, we're invited to make a choice to carry our own cross, our own figurative crosses. And what exactly that means has been the subject of discernment and debate in pre-Christian and Christian circles for millennia. Jesus himself suggests those who would follow him must deny themselves, must lose their lives in order to save them or find them, as other translations have it. But what does that mean? Traditional church teaching based on, in my view, the misguided and devastating doctrine of original sin has long asserted that we have to deny ourselves because we are fundamentally and primarily sinful. unworthy of God's love. We are the problem. And so we have to continually work against our own human nature, our own selves, if we have any hope of following Jesus. But that tired and traumatic theological premise has never squared with either the unconditional, right? Hear that, the unconditional love of God, or with Jesus's own assertion that the second greatest commandment is to love our neighbors as ourselves. Hear that. To follow Jesus is to follow the way of divine love, to live into and out of what theologian Matthew Fox and many others since have long described as our original blessing. We were fundamentally made in love for love. And so denying ourselves is not about wholesale self-judgment and self-sabotage. It's about identifying and naming and confronting and ultimately overcoming whatever in ourselves gets in the way of love. Whatever in ourselves gets in the way of loving relationship, creating loving relationship, restoring loving relationship with God, with ourselves, with our neighbors. You know as well as I do that those lists can be pretty long, but that doesn't make us depraved. It just makes us human. So to carry our cross, to take up our cross, has at least something to do with challenging, not ignoring or avoiding or bearing or otherwise guarding ourselves against whatever prevents us from loving more fully the divine presence within and beyond us, our neighbors as ourselves. It's about risking the vulnerability that is inherent in loving as God intends, as Jesus embodied. That is the stuff of more abundant life. That is what it means to risk your life, lose your life, as Jesus says, only to find it anew, to save it. Retired United Methodist pastor Steve Garness Holmes, who's actually a pastor of my aunt and uncle who live in the New England area for a long time, puts it this way, as both poem and prayer. The cross is not jewelry, not a badge or a shield. It's a risk, a vulnerability. It's not an annoyance. It's the willingness to suffer for the sake of love. The cross is planted in the great deep wound of the world, the foot of the cross sunk in cruelty, injustice, and despair. God, you know how beguiling my comfort is, how I protect myself from hurt or loss, uncertainty or struggle. I don't want to enter that pit, but if your beloved are there, will I not go there? If I go there for love, is it not love that lifts me from suffering and despair? He goes on, give me courage, God, knowing it is you who bear the cross. I only come along. When I open myself to the pain of love, it falls light upon me. Because it is love, because it is yours, it is the cross that bears me. Right, we hear that notion of protecting ourselves from hurt and loss. Right, that's Peter at the beginning of the story, right? Complaining to Jesus, telling him, like Jesus is talking about the suffering that he's about to endure. And Peter can't handle it. The disciples can't handle it because they don't want to, right? They don't want it to be hard. They don't want to hear that that's what needs to happen for Jesus to live out his faithfulness to God's divine love. Loving authentically and fully and consistently is hard work. Crosses, even if just the crossbar, are heavy. And we are not meant to carry them alone. In fact, I think it's often the case that we need community. We need each other to help recognize and confront our own crosses, especially, for example, when the crosses, again, whatever keeps us from that deeper love, are the result of trauma things that are outside of our control. Friends, we are called to continually, and Luke's version suggests daily, every day, consider the cost of discipleship, to continually engage the question, what does it mean to take up my cross and follow Jesus? What does it mean to lose my life in order to save it? What does it mean for you in your life? Though not his choice, Simon of Cyrene carried the cross to the site of Jesus' crucifixion, Golgotha, Calvary, that sacred place where the epitome of human cruelty was met and transformed by the epitome of divine love. To carry your cross for Jesus' sake, for the sake of the gospel, which, remember, we say this again and again and again, in a word, is love. For the sake of love is to intentionally and willingly, even if oftentimes hesitantly, follow Jesus wherever divine love would take you, wherever the path of divine love leads. So in that spirit, I want to close with another poem that I think provides some further insight into the essence of Jesus's invitation to take up our crosses and follow, to lose our lives in order to save them and each other's. It's a poem I've shared at least once before at Calvary from the 13th century Sufi mystic Jalal al-Din Muhammad Rumi, otherwise known, as many of you know, as Rumi. It goes like this. Forget your life. Forget your life. Say God is great. Get up. You think you know what time it is? It's time to pray. You've created so many little figurines, too many. Don't knock on any random door like a beggar. Reach your long hands out to another door, beyond where you go on the street where everyone says, how are you? And no one says, how aren't you? Tomorrow you'll see what you've broken and torn tonight, thrashing in the dark. Inside you, there's an artist you don't know about. He's, or I would add, she is, or they are not interested in how things look different in moonlight. If you are here unfaithfully with us, you're causing terrible damage. If you've opened your loving to God's love, you're helping people you don't know and have never seen. Is what I say true? Say yes, quickly, if you know, if you've known it from before the beginning of the universe. Forget your life so you can remember what's most important, what matters. Open your loving to God's love so you can be more faithfully and fully present to yourself and to the lives and the world around you. Take up your cross and follow Jesus. Follow me, Jesus says. May it be so.